prayer, blessing, benediction. All these words suggest to us something of the sacred, the holy, that takes on the very utterance of our lips. In our reading from John's Gospel today, we have just that, a prayer, a benediction, if you will, from Jesus, not only upon his gatherers around him, his disciples, but upon all who would dare to claim his name throughout generations. Benediction. John's an interesting gospel. It is different than the other three gospels. They are referred to as the synoptic gospels. They all share common sources. John just sort of does his thing over here. Tradition has it that John ended up on the island of Patmos, collected around him a peculiar group of folks to serve in a particular way. We're not altogether sure what they did there, but what they did was different than anyone else, and they were looked at as a bit of a isolationist group and did things differently than the rest of the church. It is said that their particular way of being a community of Christ oftentimes was not as accepting of those who were the rest of the fledgling church. And that lack of unity between John's gathering and others eventually began to affect the community itself. And so this prayer of Jesus for unity among the believers perhaps reflected what was going on in John's community as he or one of his disciples wrote this gospel. Jesus is portrayed here as looking forward in an almost wistful kind of way to the future of his disciples and also to others, including us, who were yet to come. And Jesus wants for these people, his followers present and future, more than anything, he wants unity. Unity. Even though John's gospel also reminds us that we are to love one another, this love that we have for one another is to bring about oneness, at oneness, being reconciled with one another. Now, the meaning and nature of that oneness is left a little bit vague, as John's gospel is prone to do. But we get the sense that whatever this oneness, this unity might be, it hasn't exactly been our strong suit as the church throughout the generations. This passage, it's situated just before Jesus' arrest and his death, and it certainly foreshadows those events. Jesus turns his attention toward the cross and begins to look at what could be called a post-earthly Jesus movement, meaning the church. Now, if his community struggled with that very question of unity, it's no wonder that he would place in Jesus' mouth a big wish, that we could all be one. Now, why is it that we're not very good at this thing called unity? Why are we not very good at it? We sometimes are okay with it within a particular congregation, but not always. I bet if you looked around the room, you could find at least one person in here that at some point in your sojourn at Trinity Soulbury, you've had an issue with them. Heaven forbid. You know, we're different. God's people are different, and that's what makes us wonderful and challenging all at the same time. We sometimes think that to be at one with one another, then we all need to act alike, or look alike, or dress alike, or talk alike, or believe alike, that we have to have the same belief system, the same doctrine. The beautiful thing about the Episcopal Church is that we are not very doctrinal. That surprises some folks, because we get up every once in a while and we say the creed and we mumble about that and go, well, I'm not sure about line 3. Line 4 I'm okay with, but number 6 there, I'm not so sure. But it doesn't matter. We say it or we don't say it. And we believe it or don't believe it. It's been said that to be an Episcopalian, you can believe whatever you want to. Whatever you want to. And you can change it daily if you want. Really doesn't make that much difference. You know, you can believe in dinosaurs or not believe in dinosaurs. And you can believe anything you want to. As long as you do one thing. You know what that one thing is? Show up. It's amazing to me how many people say, yeah, I'm an Episcopalian, and they haven't been in church since 1936. I hate to break it to them, but no, they're not. Maybe they used to be, but they're not anymore, because to be an Episcopalian means that we do something together, and that is worship. Believe whatever you want, but we come together and we worship. We have this book. Anybody know what it's called? The Book of Common Prayer. I'm glad that was said that way. Some people say, well, it's a prayer book. Well, it is a prayer book, but, you know, prayer books are a dime a dozen. There's a lot of them out there. Go to any Christian bookstore, and they'll sell you all kinds of prayer books. But they're not the Book of Common Prayer. Every Episcopal church has a Book of Common Prayer. It's the same. Now, for a while, some people still wanted to use the old one, thinking that the new one wasn't, you know, quite good enough. But if you're an Episcopal church, you have a Book of Common Prayer. Now, by common, that doesn't mean it's ordinary or not so good or not highly regarded. It's not like the commoners and the royalty. It's common because we hold it in common one with another. It is what draws us together. It is our faith, because our faith is what we do, is how we act in worship and in service, more than what we think, even what we say. We hold it in common. And that's what brings us together as God's people, at least in this expression of the church. What makes Jesus and God one is one and the same with what makes humans one with God and with one another. And that is, as John reflected, in glory, in love, and in knowledge. Glory of the kind that is shared by Jesus and God, and the love of God and the knowledge of God's name. These are the foundations for unity. What we understand about God's love for us and of our love for one another. The foundations for unity. Jesus pointedly does not suggest that unity will come from a unanimity of doctrine or belief, but it will come to us in God through Jesus. It will come through us in our sharing with one another. Think about it. If oneness comes through glory, love, and knowledge, and if oneness was what Jesus prayed for, then how do we seek it? How do we come to possess this unity that Jesus wanted? Is it a job for us merely as individuals or as governments or as a church community? Is it something for God alone to do, or is it something just for another day? And let's not think about it now. Our common prayer, our liturgy, our practice as a community, these are the symbols of our unity. There's another symbol of our unity within the Episcopal Church. Do you know what that is? Just think of our name, the Episcopal Church. What does that suggest to us? Episcopal. Bishops. It's curious. We have kind of a love-hate relationship with bishops. Particularly the farther away geographically we might be from them. And we're almost about as far as you can get from the Bishop of Pennsylvania as is possible within this diocese. Yet the bishop has always been considered, since the very early days of the church, as a symbol of unity. The chief bishop of any diocese has many names. Sometimes they're called the diocesan. There's another name that we use to call the bishop. Do you know what that is? It's similar to common. The bishop is called the ordinary. The ordinary. Now, I've known a good number of bishops, and I'm telling you, some of them are about as ordinary as you can get. Some are rather spectacular, but that's not the meaning of this word, ordinary. It's not to mean common or not astounding. It means one who brings order. It's one who is able to somehow herd all the cats together and at least allow them to worship together and to work together in spite of all their differences. It is the bishop that ordains us. Yes, specifically deacons and priests and other bishops, but in a way orders all of us in our common life together. For we are people in the church as those who are under authority. Under authority. There are two kinds of authority that we witness, both in the church and outside of the church. And one of the types of authority is what we call ordinary. Ordinary authority. It is ordered by one who is the chief or the head. There's also delegated authority, and that's the type that we're most used to. You know, someone delegates something to another person. We elect people to serve on the vestry. So we, as the church, delegate some of our responsibility to that group to do things on our behalf. But an ordered authority is that which exists, yes, within the bishop, within priests and deacons, and it also exists within all of us who are part of the church. By virtue of our baptism, we are authorized, if you will, empowered by the Spirit of God, and we have an ordered authority to be Christ in the world. 2 weeks from today, our bishop will be standing here instead of me. It'll be his first official visitation to Trinity Solebury. It'll also be his last, because as a provisional bishop, he has been here with us during the transition, and as you know, we have elected a new bishop who will begin this summer. So when Bishop Dan is here, he will have an opportunity to be a unique presence in our midst. Yeah, he can say whatever he wants to because he's not here to make friends because he's going to leave. yet I'm sure you will like him very much. When he's here, as bishops are prone to do, they will invite us to renew our baptismal vows, reminding us that we are ordered people. We have a job to do, and we have an authority in which to do it, both an authority within us and that which is delegated to us. A few people have already accepted my invitation to renew their baptismal vows in a unique and special way. And we do that every week, in some, particularly in the season of Easter, where we say the baptismal covenant. And we'll do that in just a few minutes. And that's how we do it in a general way, in a common way. But there's another way in which we renew our baptismal vows. When we do it for the first time, it's called confirmation. How many people were confirmed? Yeah, some were, some weren't. It means something. It means something different to probably each and every one of us. Some of us, no doubt, were received into the Episcopal Church. If we grew up Presbyterian or United Methodist or Disciples of Christ, or if you were a Druid or something, when you came to the Episcopal Church, maybe you were received into the Episcopal Church with the laying on of hands of the bishop. And for all intents and purposes, it's the same as confirmation. Others, if they had been confirmed maybe 10 years ago or 20 or 30 or 40 or longer, sometimes we feel a need to renew our faith, to remind ourselves again of who we are and whose we are. And so folks will present themselves to the bishop. I would hope that many of us would take the opportunity to do just that. If you haven't done it recently, give it a try. If you've not been officially received into the Episcopal Church, you may want to do that. We won't love you any less or any more, whichever way you do it, but it could be a meaningful experience to you, particularly if you're new to the church or if your life situation has changed and you feel like, I want to make a mark right here and right now. The unity for which Jesus prays, it takes many forms. It starts here in the local community, in our ability to share the love and the glory and the grace of God. And it is both influenced and affected by the relationships we then have with the larger community. And to what degree we reflect God's person in the way we live together, well, that's the $10 question. How is it that we reflect God's person in the way we are together? To divide is easy. To come together in unity takes a lot of hard work and an openness to what God would be doing within us as individuals and within a community. It moves beyond what happens here in this place to every form that the Christian faith takes in what we do beyond these four walls. A call to unity is in many ways a discipleship of resistance, to resist temptation to divide among racial or educational or socioeconomic or gender lines or anything else which may divide us. Again, to divide is easy. To come together is something altogether different. We sometimes ask, why are people not as drawn to the church as they once were? And there's many, many reasons for that. I fear that one of the primary reasons are that when people look at the church, or I should say look at the church is, and there are many of them, different names, different practices, different architectural styles. When someone from the outside looks at the church, my guess is they're confused. They're confused. For how can you proclaim one God when you're divided as God's people? How can you proclaim one God when you're divided as God's people. We confuse people with the decisions of, well, shall I be high church, low church? Shall I be Episcopalian or Lutheran? Shall I be Presbyterian? Shall I be Druid? Shall I be whatever? Again, it's not to say we all have to be the same, but we are called to be one. We cannot proclaim one God when we are a divided church. Amen.